The leader of the SDLP, Colm Eastwood, with us this morning, and the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Mike Nesbitt. Colm, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Colm, I'm sorry for keeping you this morning. Mike Nesbitt, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are we at, Colm Eastwood? What can the SDLP offer at this time?
Well, I think first of all, we're going to have an election. I think we can have no doubt about that. And I think we're going to have an election because of Arlene Foster's arrogance, her failure to accept that she had her hand on the tiller when things went very, very badly wrong with the RHA scandal. And I think we've got to that point because of that. But I also think that her arrogance.
Arlene Foster, I'll remind you, Colm, you might call her arrogant. She's got a bigger mandate than you do.
She does indeed, and it's up to the people to change that. But I think her arrogance and the DUP's arrogance over the last number of years, and we've heard a lot about that from Sinn Féin in the last couple of days, but that arrogance was fuelled, in my view, by Sinn Féin's weakness. We have heard a lot about the Irish language. We've heard a lot about equality. But only 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was a draft programme for government published. No mention of the Irish Language Act, no anti-poverty strategy, no equality legislation for the LGBT community, none of that. But we were all told that this was the best that they could do. Some of us said differently. And when I went into the election last year, I said that we wouldn't go into government if we couldn't achieve a programme for government that suited the public out there. They didn't even want to negotiate a programme for government. They didn't even want to get into any kind of detail, and we still don't have a final programme for government. We have no budget. And don't forget, the biggest issue, and whatever is going on, the biggest issue that faces our people in the next number of months is the fact that Theresa May is going to trigger Article 50 in March. In March. We will likely not even have a government here in March, and we won't have one in the lead-up time to that. I have no confidence, and have had no confidence, that our executive, our previous executive, was capable of dealing with the Brexit issue. That's why I've had to go to Dublin and all around Europe to speak to people to try and get our voice heard. Unfortunately, the executive haven't done that. We're now in a situation as well where we have no opportunity.
We're in a situation where it was journalism from many different areas in Northern Ireland that brought the weaknesses of the RHI scheme to the attention of the public. It wasn't the SDLP.
Well,
how many of your people were sitting on committees?
Well, Stephen, I think we've been over this. We know who had the information. The information sat in the department. We know what the committees were given. Very, very little information. And I do praise journalists from right across. And PA, for example, were doing this for months before other organisations took this up. But I want to give you credit and all other journalists credit for taking the story and running with it. We have been consistent on this issue. We've been strong on this issue. And I actually think that the reason why Sinn Féin are now acting tough and bringing on all these other issues is because the SDLP have been solid, strong, consistent on this issue. Sinn Féin have been all over the place on this issue. As of yesterday, they still weren't supporting a public inquiry, even though Arlene Foster actually wrote in the Belfast Telegraph that she would have accepted a public inquiry.
When we hear this party politicking from you, Colm Eastwood, have you got the people, the public, and their best interests at heart? Are you just going to have pop shots this morning at your political opponents?
No, I'm going to do what
you're targeting Sinn Féin this morning. How about telling the public what you would do in Northern Ireland?
What I'm going to do,
improve their lives.
What I'm going to consistently do is tell the truth, is stick to our position. Our position has been the same since this RHI scandal broke. But the big problem with all of this, and I said this yesterday, we now have at least a 2-month holiday for those people who are afraid of the truth coming out and afraid of accountability. When I walk down the street in Derry or Belfast or anywhere across the north or across Ireland even, all people want to know is, when are we going to find out why this scheme happened, who benefited from this scheme, and how are we going to stop the spiralling cost? And we're now in a situation where those of us in the opposition who wanted a public inquiry, who had motions in about public inquiry, asked for motions to exclude Arlene Foster when Sinn Féin and others wouldn't support that, we're now in a position where none of that will happen. None of it will happen. And I think the public have been let down by that.
And Mike Nesbitt, when you enter into an election process, will you be doing so telling the public that you want to form a government with the SDLP?
Yes. I think that would make a lot of sense if we reverted to the original Fresh Start. And the original Fresh Start was the 1998 Belfast Agreement. And at the fundamental of that is power sharing or responsibility sharing. And remember, Stephen, the Ulster Unionists were the first party to voluntarily share power. That was on the old Dungannon Council, yeah, way before the Belfast Agreement. And we called it responsibility sharing for a purpose, because if you get power, rather than holding it for the sake of your party, which has been the story of the last 10 years, what the people who elect you want you to do is to use it responsibly.
OK, so let's get clear answers this morning. You said that you would be entering election process with the view that you will form a government with the SDLP. So you're ruling out forming a government with Sinn Féin, Mike, are you?
What I'm saying is we would like to be the lead party of unionism. And if that is the case, we will seek to form a government, but a government that is going to deliver, not one that's going to be characterised by the last 10 years of DUP Sinn Féin rule, of disappointments, of debacles,
and
of scandals.
And if Sinn Féin is the largest nationalist party, will you go into government with Sinn Féin?
We would need a negotiation on that, as we will do if it's the SDLP. And that's why there's a two-week period after the election to decide and agree a programme for government, which is what we thought we were going to do after May of 2016. But on day one, when we got to the table, it was clear that the programme for government was not going to be agreed until the end of the calendar year. But actually, here we are in the new calendar year, and we still haven't got an agreed programme for government. We still don't have a budget to debate. We still don't have all the other documents that we were promised.
And do you have, as we get very close to an election being triggered, do you have a preference as to who you would like to work with in government? Is it the SDLP or Sinn Féin?
Yes. It is the SDLP. I think we should get back to the original Fresh Start agreement, which was in 1998.
And
I believe
out,
we can deliver it this time.
And given what you are currently saying about the DUP, you would rule out any pact with the DUP, would you?
Yes, I would rule out a pact. If there's an assembly election in the next few weeks, we will be standing as the Ulster Unionist Party. There will be no understanding with the Democratic Unionist Party.
And if are you also ruling out being part of a future executive? If you're not the lead party, will you definitely remain in opposition?
If we are not the lead party of unionism, I hope we will be a stronger party of opposition.
OK, so you would remain in opposition, is that correct?
That is correct. But hopefully
is that
stronger.
Is that the case for you, Colm Eastwood?
Well, let's have the election called, first of all. But I think if there is an election, we'll have a manifesto and we'll fight on that basis. And what we did the last time, we said we would go in to government if we could achieve our aims in that manifesto. But let me tell you, the standard has now risen. There is no way we could ever enter a government without a full public inquiry into what happened in RHA, and without, we'll see what happens after the election with Arlene Foster's position. But I just don't see any circumstances where we would enter a government without any of that. But I think that the opposition has just begun its work. I think you've seen that Mike and I and the Ulster Unionists and the SDLP can work together. I think we need more time around that. But I think that's a partnership that actually wants to work together. And I think it's in stark contrast to what we've seen from Sinn Féin and the DUP.
Well, Mike's going to take anybody. He's going to take the Sinn Féin or you.
Well, Mike, the Ulster Unionists will run on their platform. We'll run on ours, as will every other party. But I think if people want alternatives, people will see that there are parties who want to work together. And I think that's a far better way of doing business than parties that are forced to work together. And what we've seen this week and every other week for the last 10 years has been a lack of delivery, has been talking tough after the fact. And I actually think what's happened in the executive over the last 10 years is the DUP have run rings around Sinn Féin. They only seem to be noticing it now.
Have you not got sympathy, Mike Nesbitt, for the DUP's position that they cannot have Sinn Féin dictating the terms of government, cannot be accepting ultimatums from Sinn Féin? Either you will do this or we walk away. Are you not sympathetic with the DUP?
Well, how did Arlene Foster and the DUP fight the election? To keep Arlene Foster as First Minister, brackets, keep Demons out. And what has actually happened? Demons, in the person of Martin McGuinness, has signed Arlene Foster's resignation letter. That is to fundamentally, what the DUP do is fundamentally misunderstand the basic principle of the original Fresh Start Agreement in 1998, which is that we power and responsibility share. The executive office is a joint office. They work together. One other point, Stephen, before I go. We're obviously looking ahead to the fact we do not have an inquiry into renewable heat. Let's not forget all those victims of historical institutional abuse whose inquiry has just finished. Sir Anthony Hart has now handed over that report to the Executive Office. They were expecting it to be published at the end of next week. Where are they? They've waited for decades for truth, for justice, for acknowledgement, and now that report is sitting in limbo land. I have terrible sympathy for Margaret McGookie and Savia and all the victims.
And before you do go, Mike,
today, wondering what is happening.
And before you do go, you've been speaking to the Secretary of State, James Brokenshire. What has he said to you as to what he believes should happen next?
Well, he said, and you would expect him to say this, that he will spend the week trying to see if there is a deal to be done. He said that he would try his best to avoid an election. But I think probably in his heart of hearts, he knows that you know, that's just going through the motions. He has confirmed that at the end of the week, if there's no deal, that he will call an election in a reasonable time frame. I would predict late February stroke early March. After that, there is a legal obligation to go through that two-week process that's open for agreement on a programme for government. That could be a mini negotiation. If nothing comes of that, it is possible, and this is me speaking, not the Secretary of State, I think it is highly possible that he will have legislated at that point to allow him to suspend the institutions. And then we are into uncharted territory, Stephen. Except, if he is then in sole charge, he can bring forward a public inquiry under the 2005 Act because there is no executive forum to consult.
Okay, Mike Nesbitt, we have to go.
Thank you
very much. Call me Swid. Thank you. The leader of the Alliance Party, Naomi Long, with us now this morning. Naomi, let's not forget, as no doubt you will criticise the DUP and others, let's not forget that they have a very significant political mandate in Northern Ireland. Only months ago they achieved that mandate.
And yesterday they threw it away, Stephen, and their mandate is as worthless as anyone else's as of this morning, because if we end up in another election, none of us have a mandate. We go and seek a new mandate. So for all the talk of the fact that they had a great mandate, they did not use that mandate to deliver. Ultimately, you are only as good as your last election, and you're only as good as what you do when you're elected. And what we have seen is a failure here to be able to govern. We don't get elected for the sake of it. We don't get elected so we can preen ourselves based on our election results. We get elected so we can do a job. And what we have seen here is a complete failure of this executive to be able to do the job. And that makes me both sad, because I think it is...
It's not a complete failure, is it? They've been travelling around the world trying to bring prosperity and investment into Northern Ireland. They've achieved a deal on corporation tax with the British government. That they have achieved things.
No, Stephen, it is a complete failure.
They achieved concessions. We have the best circumstances. We have the best conditions with welfare reform of any place in the UK. It's wrong to say they've achieved nothing.
First of all, welfare reform was resolved in the last executive.
The highest foreign direct investment outside of London. Stop saying they've achieved nothing. They have achieved.
Stephen, if I could finish, also achieved the last executive. The ultimate failure of any government is that it doesn't last the term. So they have completely failed, because they have failed to see out their five-year term, despite the fact that they had this huge mandate, which we have heard about over the last number of months. The reality is, what they didn't have was the same appetite to take responsibility for their actions as they had to take power. And that is the big disconnect that we have here. When you take on a ministerial role, when you take on a responsible position, you've got to accept the accountability and responsibility that goes with that role. You can't simply assume power and assume that you've no accountability that goes with it. And that's what we have seen. And what we need now are politicians elected who will take their responsibility seriously, as well as their power and their mandate. I don't believe that an election will solve anything, and I have said this continuously. We still need a public inquiry into the renewable heat incentive. We still need to know why what happened happened. We still need to know who made those decisions, and we still need someone to be held to account for that. And that will not change because of an election. But what will change is that we will lose money in terms of the cost of the election, and we will lose opportunity, because while we fight an election, we have no budget. We have no budget for Northern Ireland, Stephen. That's a failure of governance. That's the most basic thing a government has to do. It was the one job that they had to finish by March of this year, and they have failed abjectly to produce a budget.
Well,
we need a plan for Brexit. We need no, Stephen.
Well, hold on, Naomi. Hold on 1 second.
They failed abjectly to produce that either.
Just to explain, because John Campbell, our business and economics editor, has been helping us understand this. In the scenario that a budget is not agreed by Stormont, okay,
the legislation
does have a contingency plan.
It does.
The permanent secretary, currently David Stirling, steps in, takes control of the budget. He can release a sum not exceeding 75% of the previous year's budget, keeps the show on the road, so to speak.
Yes.
If we get to the end of July and there's still no budget, the permanent secretary then gets access to resources equivalent to 95% of the previous year.
Yes.
But the legislation is then silent on what happens after that.
Yes. So they have failed to set a budget. And Stephen, let's be clear. The community and voluntary sector return to work after the Christmas break. Many people have been put on protective 3 month notice because they do not know what their budget will be for next year and whether they will be able to continue to be employed. We have people in our schools who do not know what their budget will be for next year, but we know there is a major crisis with school budgets. We have a health service that needs reformed, and those reforms will now be on hold because nothing will be able to happen in the interim. And with respect to RHI, specifically with respect to RHI, the tap will not be able to be turned off because the DUP's plan, for what it was worth, though it was rubbished when they published it, but when the DUP said they had a plan to try to fix this, it required emergency legislation. There can be no emergency legislation without an executive and an assembly. So until the election is finished, the money continues to be burned. Now, I think that that is a serious indictment. Those are basic things that people elect a government to do. And I think it is fair to say that it has been an abject failure if after 18 months we're back at the polls voting again. What we need to do is to choose this time, not green or orange, not dark green or light green, light orange or dark
green. Green and orange is people's identity.
Stephen, this is not about people's identity. People have their identity regardless of the outcome of the election. Their identity is protected by the institutions that we have. This is about governance. This is about competent or incompetent. It is about accountable or not accountable. And that's the decision that people need to take when they go to the ballot box. Do they want people who will be happy to be held accountable for their choices, who will be happy to take responsibility for their actions, or do they want a continuation of the fiasco that we have seen over the last number of months?
You were saying, I'm currently broadcasting from Los Angeles this morning. I'm on holiday. So I might be out of the loop. But the last time I was in Northern Ireland, which was a couple of weeks ago, you were not calling for Arlene Foster to resign. You were not saying her position was untenable. Are you still of that opinion?
I think that Arlene Foster has damaged her own credibility by her behaviour over the last month. I think she had an opportunity, and I think I was very fair, Stephen. I said that I thought Arlene Foster should temporarily stand aside without any prejudice to her position or her innocence or guilt in all of this, and allow a public inquiry to take place where the truth could be ascertained. If she was cleared of any responsibility, she would have returned to her post as First Minister in a stronger position. If she was found to be responsible, then people would make the judgment as to whether or not.
Yeah, there's a fair argument against that, though, isn't there? That if you feel you've done nothing wrong, you don't have another political party dictating that you step aside, you get on with the job.
But the truth truth is, Stephen, that we didn't dictate she step aside. We called on her to do so, and it's entirely right that we should have that voice. And there is a conflict of interest for a minister in government, particularly one with the all-pervading influence of a first minister, to continue in their role and in their office during a time when an inquiry is taking place. It's inappropriate. Her predecessor, Peter Robinson, established that that wasn't the appropriate way to go, and so he stepped aside when an investigation was taking place into alleged allegations that were made against him. In any other administration, let's be honest about this, Stephen, in any other administration, her head would have rolled on a permanent basis, because that's how government works. It's whether or not you're seen to be competent as much as whether or not you are competent. And in this case, I think we were being entirely reasonable. However, it's not any longer just about what Arlene did as Deputy Minister. It has been about her imperiousness and her petulance as First Minister, her inability to...
For which she has a mandate, a much bigger mandate
than you have. She does not have a mandate ignore her partners in government, Stephen. She does not have a mandate to ignore her partners in government. And if you need evidence of that, look at Martin McGuinness's resignation. She is no longer First Minister this morning, because our institutions are based around power sharing. This is the lie of every election. It is not unionist versus nationalist. It is unionist governing with nationalism after the elections. And the DUP have never accepted that's the case. And this is the rub, Stephen. Arlene was ever, her mandate was only ever as strong and effective as her ability to exercise it in concert with Sinn Féin, who also had a mandate, and to do so respecting the institutions. When she got to her feet and made a statement as First Minister without the approval of Martin McGuinness, she sealed her fate, because she drove a coach and horses through those shared institutions. We now need change in the executive if we want to see it last, and that's what we will be offering people in the election.
Naomi Long, thank you very much.